This is episode 4 of the Antarctic Cast, and the idea today is talking briefly about space weather. So in my first week, which is this week, in the British Antarctic Survey, it was a really interesting talk about space weather, and then we learned about the solar storm of 1859, which is also called the Carrington event, which was basically the sun spitting a lot of particles through a process called coronal mass ejection, which is basically a flare of particles leaving the sun. And this is currently occurring in bigger or smaller magnitude. But in 1859, there weren't a lot of electronics, electrical devices or satellites, any in the sky. So this big storm didn't affect it so much, those systems, but it could. So a big solar storm have the potential to affect many things, from planes to pipes, transformation towers, GPS systems, rockets, satellites, and probably many more that are not in those previously mentioned or in any group that we are aware of, so probably even more areas. And those charged particles, they are interesting for many things. So when they hit the magnetic field of the Earth, they can create auroras, aurora australis, because it's in the southern hemisphere that we're talking about or focus right now. And these events, they also, even the ones that are not that strong as the Carrington event, they can lead to a lot of damage. So there was also a not so big, but also big event in 2003, where 47 satellites reported malfunction. One was a total loss. 10 satellites lost service for more than one day. And those things are quite expensive, so very expensive systems if they get lost. And often this leads to the discussion of claims, because if a satellite presents defect because of design flaw, it will not receive any coverage from an insurance. But if it's a natural event like this, it could potentially. So it's important also from the insurance point of view to keep track of space weather. But also space weather could be related to planning. So you don't want to launch a mission if you know a big space event is coming, like a weather event that could damage your spacecraft. And for that, in the Halley Station, there are quite of a range of instruments that are checking atmospheric weather. So low-frequency waves are detected there, and geomagnetic fields. Then there is very low-frequency antennas, which are also measuring the electron loss in the atmosphere. And the reason for that is that many models, like GPS models and other stuff, they depend on these parameters, like electrons in the atmosphere. So by knowing them, you can write better corrections to GPS and keep it precise, for instance. And there's also magnetometers. And radiometer used to be in the station. Now there's a project in place to kind of replace that, but it's not yet collecting science data, just engineering data. And one possible application of the stuff mentioned is trying to understand how the atmospheric conditions are, because this influences many processes like debris. So the debris, space debris, they might deorbit faster or slower depending on those processes. And which means you could have, imagine like the total number of debris in space could go up if you have more debris being created and less debris being deorbit, or go down if the atmospheric and solar particles are hitting those objects and accelerating the orbit. So those weather events can also impact the number of debris in space. Auroras. So auroras are also of a very... they are in the focus of science because we don't understand them completely. Actually, during the talk, we heard that there is more than one process of formation of auroras. There's the classic one, which is charged particles from the sun hit the magnetic field of Earth. It forms, like, it destroys a place in the front of the magnetic field called sheath, I think. And then it creates in the back, in the tail of the magnetic field, a reconnection, and this flows back to the poles, which creates auroras. And there's another process with particles that resonate in a given frequency, and then they get more energetic until they discharge in the atmosphere. Also, in a British Antarctic Survey operates a network of magnetometers in Antarctica, which have to be serviced every now and then. This is also some reason why we learned during the talk, because we might have to service these instruments. There used to be a darn network of antennas, which are getting atmospheric heating rates. This is currently moved away from the station, so it's in South Georgia Island. And with all these measurements, we can better understand and forecast for big weather events, which have the potential to destroy many things in our society. Just to give an idea of how this is important, in 2012, if I'm not mistaken, there was one of these big weather events, but the coronal mass ejection was in the other side of the sun, like hitting direction to, back then it was Jupiter. And if this would have happened 1 week before, because the sun is constantly rotating, it would be pointed towards the Earth. And I think the cost that are associated to an event of that magnitude, it would be like trillions of dollars, if I don't have the perfect number, but I heard trillions. And this is to just think about like energy. So you have a network grid with a lot of transformers, and then you have a big shockwave in this grid, which will probably destroy many transformers, which take months to replace. But saying that you have the spares, but you won't have that many spares, so you create really a big energetic problem, and all this consequence of having no electric grid, let's say in a whole country or even globally, this would be quite expensive. And also, so this is one explanation of why this data is being collected. And the other is generally for trying to refine your models and being better to forecast, just understanding for the sake of understanding, which I think it's also a valid point of science to understand better the universe. So this was a very interesting talk. I thought was worth sharing a bit. I will try to link some images in the description, as well as interesting content that have to do with that. And as always, thank you so much for listening. I hope this was interesting and clear enough. And for complementary knowledge, just take a look at the links, and then hopefully we learn a bit more about space weather and how this is related to Antarctica.